The Boat Briefing Podcast is brought to you by KVH Industries. If you don't know about KVH, they create and deliver the innovations that enable our mobile world. A global leader in mobile connectivity, KVH's groundbreaking, award-winning solutions enable people on leisure boats, yachts, and commercial vessels to stay connected to business, family, and friends using innovative hybrid communications and content. Founded in 1982, the company is based in Middleton, Rhode Island, with research, development and manufacturing operations in Middleton and sales, service and engineering offices around the world. But did you know, Sophia, that KVH has fielded more than 230,000 mobile satellite antennas worldwide for satellite television and satellite communications?
That is a lot of antennas.
How about the fact that the KVH Superyacht Group offers white glove concierge service available 24/7 every day of the year around the globe?
I'm a big fan of white glove concierge.
Me too. Check out KVH at KVH Yachting and Boating on Facebook, KVH Yachting on Instagram, and also visit KVH Yachting and Boating page on LinkedIn. Now, on with the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson.
Hi, Stu. Welcome home.
Thank you. It's been two and a half weeks. My wife says it's been 3 weekends. She counts in weekends because obviously weekends is tough with four kids.
It feels like a long time, and you've almost got a resemblance of a tan, so it must have been a long time.
Everyone says I'm positively glowing. Actually, no, they don't.
Everyone.
They say you're mildly less pale than you were when you left.
I like what Caroline said, which was that your freckles are sort of all joining together in one giant freckle.
If you look at me for a distance, the freckles blur.
Yeah.
I do actually look quite tanned. Up close, it's hugely disappointing. But from a distance, I'm okay. It looks all right.
Story of your life.
Basically. Good from afar.
Nice from far, but far from good.
Far from good, yeah. Well, on that note, let's talk about my whirlwind couple of weeks in the Caribbean and America. So, obviously, you guys have talked about Between the Bays at a fair amount.
I've talked about Between the Bays. Cecile's talked about Between the Bays. So, yeah, I feel... But go on, you give your unique viewpoint on Between the Bays.
It was amazing, obviously. So, but I guess everyone's a bit between the bayed out. It was spectacular, though. I can't wait to do it again. So after Between the Bays, most people came home. I went on to St. Bart's with a few of the team because we had an event in Gustavia at the new Ocean Club there, which is awesome. Brilliant rooftop overlooking Gustavia Harbour. Sun's going down, you drink in the view, boats are bobbing. I mean, it's just spectacular. And we had dinner there a few nights after the party, and the food is world class. Jared, the chef there, he really knows what he's doing. It was just gorgeous. But the night was a big success. We had 90 odd people, lots of owners of boats and industry friends, and it was great. And then the racing itself was brilliant because it was lumpy. You know, it was blowing 20, 25 knots. So any breezier and they might have had to cancel. If it was gusting kind of 30, 35 knots, then that's trouble for these big boats.
You seem to manage to get yourself on quite a few big boats, judging by your Instagram.
Yeah, I just get out the WhatsApp and start flagging as much as I possibly can. So I was very kindly invited onto Almira 2, Big Perini, fresh from a refit. Owners are just delightful. Big Greek flag flying. And then as we crossed the finishing line, the Greek music came on and everyone started dancing. It was brilliant. Actually, talk about dancing. The second day I was in Red Dragon, and they kicked off the entire day with dancing.
Wow.
Because they won. They got a bullet on the first day. And then on the second day, one of the guests put on One More Time. You know, that one more time. I'm not going to sing. But and then the entire contingent of guests started dancing around the cockpit of this boat. I did grab a video of that. It was very funny. Everyone had to join in. And the third day, I was on the 63-meter Athos. Again, another boat fresh from a refit. In fact, all these three boats were looking very good indeed. Because Almira 2, they spent That was kind of a year of work, a year and change of work, getting her up to snuff. Red Dragon, the new owners of Red Dragon, spent some time and money modifying her and bringing her up to their requirements. And then Athos as well. A lot of work done on Athos at Royal Houseman by her new owner.
I think I mentioned this before, but I have a soft spot for Red Dragon because she was the first super yacht that I ever went on.
Is that right?
Yeah, I went on a fam trip in the French Riviera on a couple of days on her when she was for sale with Edmundston 8 years ago.
Wow.
She was for sale by her original owner then, I think.
That would have been one of your first trips at boat, right?
Yeah, it was literally probably one of the first times I left the office. Wow. Well, that and Genoa Yacht Show where I locked myself in the loo and cried, but that's a different story.
Well, obviously, we'll have to dig into that story some other time. But Red Dragon, great boat, beautiful boat. And there were so many guests on it. It's like the owner was incredibly generous. He's like, yeah, it's all good, come on. So
they obviously were between the bays as well, and the crew during the cocktail competition were just so on it.
They were robbed in the cocktail competition.
I don't know what went on there. Something went wrong with the mask because they were definitely robbed.
I really like their cocktail. So three amazing boats, some amazing owners, and some brilliant racing. And it was pretty lumpy and very breezy. On the last day, it's usually a counterclockwise race around the island. So on the first day, I think they go clockwise. And on the third day, they go counterclockwise. Or I might have those backwards. But either way, they go around the island one way or the other. But they couldn't because the weather was just not conducive to that route on the third day. So it was more of a kind of around some of the offshore islands and around a few cans. But it was still loads and loads of fun. Then after St. Barts, it was up to Miami, then Fort Lauderdale, and then Palm Beach for the boat show.
Yeah, how was it?
It was great. Look, it's the best show for me. Fort Lauderdale, it's the best purist super yacht show, if you know what I mean. So Fort Lauderdale's vast and endless.
Yes, and hot.
And hot. But Palm Beach has got a slightly more super yacht air to it. It was hot as hell as well on the last couple of days. It was very, very, very warm. There's some big boats over at Rybovich as well, which kind of wasn't part of the show, but they were there if you wanted to get up to Rybovich. My favorite part of the market, obviously, the crazy center console market, the kind of $2 million, 60-foot, 60-knot, 4 outboard motor center console market is still very, very strong. I'm told by various people that finance such boats and build them.
Didn't pick one up. Nice welcome home gift. Sure that would have gone down well.
I'm not sure that works on the Thames, really.
I'm back and I also, darling, we now own.
We now own a $3 million boat that we can't afford. It's a great show, but because it's an up and coming show and it's getting better all the time, it does present a challenge for Informer because I think it's a better show than the Miami one from a super yacht point of view. Miami's got its all inherent, you know, everyone knows the inherent challenges of Miami. It's a nightmare to get around Miami. So getting to and from bits of that show can be very, very challenging. So, you know, I think there's a decision has to be made sooner or later from Informer's point of view, where you put your eggs. And if it was me, I'd put them all in Palm Beach. I just think it's there's more buyers up there. It's a very active market. The location suits. It's not as mad in terms of traffic and people. And everyone seems to really, really like it.
And we, of course, had a couple of events at Palm Beach as well to continue your partying tour.
Yes, this was events 3 and 4 of the trip. So we did a Captain's Club event at on the rooftop of the Ben. And if you know the Ben in Palm Beach, it's kind of right next to the show. And it's the loudest rooftop in the world. I swear to God, they really turn it up. So the old man in me comes out. So I just
can't hear.
Just can't hear anything. But it was great. We had lots and lots of captains and they brought their senior crew and we had some food and we had some drinks and we racked up an impressive bar bill.
Chicken wings?
Lots of chicken wings. We had, you know, and lobster and pizza. It was great. Some brilliant captains came along. So that was very enjoyable. And the next night couldn't have been more of a contrast. We had chamber music. We were in the elegant gardens of Norton Museum of Art for a sit-down owners' club dinner, which was, again, delightful. Some brilliant owners, some new faces. Great to catch up with some old friends as well. It was great.
Trying to work out which one you'd be more out of place at, thumping music or chamber.
Well, like, somewhere in the middle. What's the middle ground between those two?
Soft jazz. Not a place anyone wants to be.
No. I'm not sophisticated enough for jazz. I got on some good boats at the show. I had a look around 70 meter Alpha, which is obviously the Benetti, 75 meter Arrow, the Fed ship, which I hadn't seen before. I had been on Coral Ocean before, post refit, but not in such granular detail. I hadn't been through with such granular detail.
What did you make of Coral Ocean? I know she slightly divides opinion after the refit.
The biggest thing is brightness. I mean, she's so much brighter now. And whether there's people who loved the previous interior and who will not like the present interior, but ultimately the owner's done what the owner's done for a reason, and it's his boat. He can do what he likes with it, really. And you know, if you like light, bright, contemporary, modern interiors, it's an absolute winner as a boat. The sun deck's radically different, creating a lot more volume up there. And it's an absolute charter platform now. And everything's been upgraded, and they spent a lot of money and a lot of time in Palma doing it.
She's a WSA nominee as well.
She is indeed. And I was very impressed with Arrow, the 75 meter Fed ship. She was a previous WSA nominee as well. Unfortunately, the judges never got a chance to look on Arrow because she was super, super private at the time. But I think that's a shame because she is a spectacular boat. That interior is very, very impressive. And, it's often hard to tell from pictures, but the H2, the job H2 I've done on the interior is spectacular, and the fit out's first class. And she's done a lot of chartering since delivery, and she looks absolutely immaculate. So very, very impressed by Arrow. And, you know, just the Fedship quality throughout. Touch it, feel it, see it. It's all through it. Amazing. And the engineering spaces, they're immaculate, absolutely immaculate. And the Honeyfits was there, of course, the 28.3-meter yacht built by Defoe in 1931 that was, of course, presidential yacht of JFK. No one was allowed on board, though, which is a great shame because as a piece of history, living marine history.
Yeah, is that because she's not quite finished the refit?
That's what I was told. So the refit wasn't complete. But then why was it at the show?
Yeah.
It seems strange. Anyway, but from the outside, though, from the glimpse I got, she looked great.
Swim up to a porthole.
Yeah. Climb on board when the show closed and no one's looking. You hear about Honeyfits and you see those classic black and whites of JFK and Jackie on the boat in the 60s. And then to see her in the flesh was quite something. So it was lovely to see Honeyfits. So it was interesting as well, around the show, there was some news announced about acquisitions. And clearly there's this ongoing process of consolidation in the superyacht business. San Lorenzo announced that it had finalized its acquisition of a 49% stake in yacht electrical systems provider Sea Energy. So Sea Energy specializes in the design, production, and installation of naval electrical systems for boats and yachts from 20 to 70 meters in length. And according to San Lorenzo, the move is of strategic importance as it continues the vertical integration of key suppliers. So these are about big brands absorbing parts of the supply chain, because we all know the supply chain's been challenged in recent years. So in an effort, I guess, to get boats delivered on time, these big beasts are absorbing parts of the supply chain.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I wonder whether it's happening in other industries.
I don't know.
Like automotive, for example, it'd be interesting to know whether there's similar things going on there, because obviously they face a lot of the same challenges around the supply chain.
That's a great question. I don't know. So if anyone's listening and does know the answer, let us know, podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com.
I'll get our boat business writer, Gabby, on it.
Yeah, Gabby, a superstar. So, I mean, Ferretti Group, you might remember in 2022, Ferretti Group acquired a few companies, Mosello, based in Fano, wooden furniture manufacturer, and Fratelli Canaliccio, based in Narni, makes static exteriors and automatic kinetic systems for yachts. So again, two, kinetic systems and wooden furniture, a lot of that on yachts. So Ferretti took those on, and now San Lorenzo have taken on Sea Energy as well. So I think we'll just see more and more of it. And at a more meta level, I suppose, Marine Max has bought Fraser and Northrop & Johnson, and now IGY. OneWater bought Denison back in 2022. So, you know, it's a theme I think we're going to see more
feels
and more
like
of.
In the end, they'll just be Marine Max.
Yeah, I know.
Marine Max and boat, reporting on it.
yeah. Just this enormous behemoth of a company. But talking about the... Ferretti Group, they, I mean, as well as acquiring, they're also expanding. They've just bought a new 70,000 square meter production site in San Vitale, a province of Ravenna in northeastern Italy.
We spoke about it on last week's pod.
Did we?
Which you obviously listened to on your travels, so, as an avid boat briefing listener.
I'm a few behind. This comes after their announcement that revenues across the group had exceeded $1 billion in 2022, up 14.6% on the previous year. So the Ferretti Group's adjusted EBITDA sits at €140 million, representing a 36.5% rise on 2021's EBITDA number. And since it's kind of coming to the end of results season, we could highlight a few other superyacht firms. The Italian Sea Group reported an order book in excess of $1 billion early this year. Net revenues for 2022 hit €295 million, up more than $100 million from 2021. Preliminary EBITDA for the year was equal to €47 million, with a margin of 15.9%. Marine Max, which we referenced earlier, obviously, grew revenues to $507.9 million in its first fiscal quarter of 2023, up 7% on the same period the previous year. San Lorenzo reported a net order backlog of $1.07 billion in 2022, up 14.4% on 2021. So that's basically the value of their order book as of 31st of December 2022. Heightened performances across all areas of the business brought San Lorenzo's adjusted EBITDA to €130.2 million, a sizable increase of 36.3% on the number in 2021. So lots of really bullish numbers from the yards and various other people for 2022. But one of the things people were saying in Palm Beach, whilst the quality of audience was still very, very strong at the show, there didn't seem to be as many people there. And that might reflect a slightly softening market. And you've noticed, Sophia, some big brokerage price drops that might, anecdotally at least, support that.
I mean, it's definitely anecdotal, but it's definitely, we weren't seeing the likes of these last year. And they've been kind of steadily filtering into the brokerage inbox for, you know, the last couple of months. So kind of going through the list of some of the ones that caught my attention. So there's been a €9 million price drop on the 85.7 meter Avoking B2. She's listed for sale with Moravia Yachting. She was delivered in 2009 and she's been meticulously maintained. And she's obviously underwent a big multi-million pound refit last year with Winch Design. She was at Monaco Yacht Show last year, I believe, as well. So she's now asking $79 million. There's also been a $7 million price reduction on 71.7 meter Kogo with Burgess. She was, of course, designed by Tim Hayward, built with an ice-class steel hull and delivered in 2006 and still features her Terence Dinsdale interior. She is now asking $62.5 million. I think we spoke about this on the podcast before, but Come Together, the first of the Amel 60 Limited Edition, has had a €3.55 million price reduction. So she's now asking €65,950,000. There's been a 2 million price drop on the 50-metre Illyria. She's listed for sale with IYC. She was delivered by Turquoise Yachts in 2013, and she is now asking €19.5 million. And finally, the last one is DB9. She's obviously been on the market for a little while now because I interviewed her owner back in Monaco Yacht Show 2021 when he'd first listed her for sale. And she's had another million dollar price reduction. So she's now asking $21,900,000. So that's just a selection of kind of the ones that I clocked over the past sort of maybe 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. So there's definitely a bit of kind of price readjustment on the market.
Yeah, some interesting that, isn't it? Because we didn't see such chunky price drops in the kind of the heat of the pandemic when the market was incredibly strong. So,
I think what will be interesting to see heading into the med season is whether we start to see charter deals as well, because I always think that's an interesting tell of the market as well, because we just haven't seen really publicised charter deals going on, particularly over the last couple of med seasons when it's been so in demand. So that'll be another interesting tell.
And this is the most reactive part of the market. Mm. So as a forward indicator, it's quite telling. So I think we need to... Q1's not quite done yet, but when it is done next week or the week after, what we should do is a little wrap up of compare Q1 2023 to the last 5 or 6 years, and we'll bring you those numbers and we'll see how it shapes up. And we should ask Gabby as well to, I'm sure you have already, to question a few brokers to see what they're saying too.
Yes, don't worry. We'll have our Q1 analysis as part of our Boat Pro premium content. And then we will also have our usual monthly analysis that we do as always on Boat Pro News.
I should never have doubted you. Talking about the brokerage market, what is your brokerage pick this week?
So my pick, I've gone one end of the spectrum this year, so under a million. And my pick, I think we spoke about this yacht before, I have a real soft spot for it, is Frederikstad. Is that how you pronounce it? Frederikstad?
Yeah, Frederikstad. Yeah.
So she's a 22.8 metre vessel, which was initially commissioned as a lifeboat in 1968. And she was named in honour, which I hadn't realised actually until I was researching it for this week, of the citizens of Frederikstad in Norway who commissioned and paid for her. So during her 20 years in service, she apparently helped save 11 lives, performing more than 600 rescues, and was finally decommissioned in 1988 and was sold to a private individual from Oslo who used her for salvage and exploration. In 1996, she was then purchased by the late Peter de Savary, of course, of America's Cup fame, and he stripped her right back, I think, completely to her bare frames and completely restored her and transformed her into a yacht. She's undergone numerous refinements since then. She was with Pendennis in 2006, and then I think she's had another two big refits in 2012 and 2021. And she can now accommodate 8 guests. She's got a pretty old school gentleman's interior, but it's so old school that I think it's actually quite cool now. And she is listed for sale with Fraser asking just €850,000. So I think she's a bargain. She just looks like a cheery yacht.
She's a happy little ship, isn't she?
So, I don't know why that is. She does, whenever I look at her, I smile.
Yeah, jaunty.
Yeah, she looks like she belongs in a kid's book.
And she's a lifesaver. She saved 11 lives.
Yeah.
So this boat, I know a bit about her because de Savary sold her once by hanging a big for sale sign off her superstructure in Manhattan. It's big enough so all the people in the skyscrapers could see that this boat was for sale. Classic canny de Savary marketing idea there. What a brilliant bloke and a huge loss. So I've gone for a 43 metre called Just Enough, delivered by Ares Marine in the US in 2012. So she's for sale with IYC asking $8.495 million. So why have I gone?
I don't know. It's a real departure for you.
For 43 metre Just Enough. Well, simply, I was talking to her captain.
And he slipped you.
Yeah.
$20.
No money change plans, I promise. So he's a brilliant bloke called Austin McClure. So I met him at our Captain's Club event at the Ben last week. And he was telling me, because I wasn't aware, he was telling me just what a charter machine she is. So some figures I found online from Worth Avenue, actually, show that from 2018 to the end of 2022, she generated $7.9 $8 million in gross charter revenue. That's $8 million, more or less, in 4 years, at a charter rate of $139,000 per week. That works out about 57 weeks of chartering in those 4 years alone. And in just the month from January to August 2022, she generated $3 million in charter revenue. So she doesn't cross to the Med. She stays on the US side of the pond, and she really focuses and specializes, or has, and you know, recently in the Virgin Islands. She's become really well known in these waters and just got these amazing itineraries and amenities too. She's got them all: wave runners, water slides, sea bobs, paddle boards, fishing gear, 34-foot chase boat. She sleeps 11 in 5 cabins and 9 crew. Got like a classic North American cherry interior, all aluminium, 278 gross tons. But what I like about it is that it's costing $8.495 million. But in running costs aside, you're basically earning your money back in 4 or 5 years in charter income. So what you're doing as you step into this boat is buying a massively successful and highly tuned charter program with a great, great crew.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I quite frequently get asked, you know, can you make money from CP? You know, can you make money if you buy a CP on charter it? And generally my answer is always no, because you're never going to be able to charter enough to offset your running costs. You can take away parts of your costs, or you can maybe, if you're very fortunate, kind of break even on running costs. But by the sounds of it, she actually is quite profitable.
Yeah, I think she is. And I think it's all about the right location, the right crew, the right program, the right boat. And if you tick all the boxes, you know, there is some pretty good money to be made.
And as an owner, you have to be super flexible. You have to not be on during peak weeks. You have to take that if you get a last minute charter, you've got to rearrange. It does also take a kind of different owner mentality as well,
I think. It really does. Charter comes first. So Kim Vi Peterson, the owner of Q and Parsifal 3, told me if he gets a charter, he'll jump off the boat and swim to the nearest hotel. That's how seriously they take charter.
Yeah, well, I think the owner of, what was he called? Sir Donald Gosling. Who owned Leander G?
Yeah, Donald Gosling.
Sir Donald Gosling was similar as well. When I spoke to his captain about Leander G, he said, yeah, you were given 12 hours notice. He was off the boat in a hotel and you turned it round for charter.
And that's if you want to make money in the charter game, that's the attitude you have to take. I think John Corbell operates similarly. You know, if he gets a charter, he'll change his plans. Okay, so we've got Fredrikstad versus Just Enough.
I'm sticking with mine. Yeah, I know Just Enough's a charter machine, but
so we've got a charter machine against jaunty little ship.
Just my jolly boat.
Jolly little boat.
Just in need of a jolly boat.
Well, if you make enough money running Just Enough, you can buy Fredrikstad with the profits from a charter season.
Done.
All right, let's talk some news. Why don't you go first, Sophia?
So first up, we have that Dutch shipyard Royal Hasselmann has announced the hull turning of 65-metre Aquarius II. Still known as Project 408, the in-build sailing superyacht is an evolution of the 56-metre Aquarius, which was built for the same owner. The owner's representative, Godfrey Cray, said the changes between the two yachts would be subtle, but that the additional length would allow for some significant changes specified by the owner. He estimates that the 9-metre increase in length of the new Aquarius has amounted to around a 45% increase in terms of volume, which also makes space for a fourth guest cabin. The yacht will have a lifting keel and a draft of 7.6 metres, as well as a main mast of 67.5 metres and a mizzen mast of 60 metres, resulting in a total downwind sail area of more than 4,500 square metres. She's expected to be completed in 2024.
Thank you, Sophia. Meanwhile, ISA Yachts, a brand of Palumbo superyachts, has announced the sale of a new custom 66-metre superyacht to be built in the yard's Ancona facility. The unnamed project will see the yard reunite with Studio Vallicelli for the exterior and Studio Alberto Pinto for the interior, with the same team having previously collaborated on ISA's 66-metre Octo in 2014. That was one of the first big boat stories I wrote at Boat International, was Octo.
Back when you still wrote... great story.
Back when so it was a long time ago. I really liked the boat. We went for a cruise off Monaco, went down the coast. It was rather lovely. And I remember the captain at the time We had a beer on the foredeck. I thought, this is all right. It's life of Boat International. Anyway, as a fan. It's just been sold, Octo, hasn't it? Recently been sold. I think I've got that right. If I've got it wrong, we'll have to delete this in the edit. Anyway, I'll carry on with the news story. The yacht will feature a steel hull and aluminium superstructure with naval architecture by Palumbo. Expected highlights on board include a beach club with opening platforms to reveal a large living area housing a gym, lounge and spa. The yacht has been sold to a European owner with an unspecified delivery date.
So next up, we have that a year after her technical launch, fresh details about the 50-metre Bilgin 163 have been revealed. She's now been named Eternal Spark, and the yard's also revealed that she's going to make her debut at this year's Monaco Yacht Show. Featuring exterior design from Unique Yacht Design, the yacht builds on the success of smaller models such as Snow 5 and Starburst 3. Interiors come courtesy of Milan-based studio Hot Lab, and the yacht is built for entertaining with four decks, five separate bars, and seven different socialising areas on board. Other design highlights include a full-height round glass wall that defines the main salon and lobby. And there you can also find a giant chandelier, a floating staircase, and a skylight onto the sun deck floor. So I look forward to seeing her in Monaco.
So Octo was sold in 2020.
Yeah, not recently.
Recently.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Time really does fly. Wowzers. So 2020, not so recently. Last but not least, a salvage operation is underway to remove the 49-metre Aegean yacht 007 from her current resting place in the waters of Kynthos in Greece. The semi-submerged superyacht had been in the same spot since she ran aground and listed in September 2022. It is understood that the incident occurred when the yacht struck an underwater obstacle as a result of a failure in the navigation system, and then she began to take on water. Do you remember the photos?
Mm.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Allegedly, she was then deliberately grounded to avoid sinking in deep water. The yacht was hoisted into an upright position in the early hours of March the 21st this year, but it is still unclear whether it will be possible to get her back on the water.
Yeah, I hope she can be salvaged. There were some pretty amazing photos when that incident happened. You know, it was picked up by the BBC.
Yeah.
That's kind of transcended.
The superyacht stories really cut through when one's sinking.
Yeah, or on fire.
They're on fire. They love a sinking and on fire story, don't they? So last but not least, in honour kind of the kind of passing Caribbean season as thoughts shift to the Med, we thought we'd dig into BoatPro, the industry's award-winning market intelligence platform, and have a look at the numbers of boats in the Caribbean. So Sophia, why don't you tell us what we're seeing?
Yeah, so I think the top line basically is that we have seen 950 yachts visit the Caribbean in the 4 months from December to March 2023. Amongst those, there were 11 super yachts that were over 100 metres, including Rising Sun, Affinity, Apo, Le Grand Bleu, Bravo Eugenia, Chaos, Black Pearl and Symphony. Worth noting that a majority of those are US owned. There's also been a number of large sailing yachts in the area as well, including Black Pearl, Eos, Equio, Sea Eagle, Athos that you obviously were on, and Adix as well. There are also a number of beautiful classic yachts in the Caribbean this winter, including Christina O, Narlin, Talita, Haida, Sherakan, and Shamara.
Some lovely boats amongst those. I saw a few of them. Black Pearl, obviously. Was in St. Bart's. Arpo is nearby in Rybovich. I was talking to her captain at the Captain's Club event, actually. She just got up to Rybo because she's a big boat, one of the biggest boats to go up there, I think. And she didn't have a huge amount of water to play with. Akio was around in St. Bart's as well. Sea Eagle. Was nearby too. I did desperately try and have a little look on Akio, but failed. Next year.
They wouldn't let you on.
Next year.
You about your reputation.
So we've got the raw numbers as well. So in the 2020-2021 season, obviously COVID affected, there were 758 superyacht visits to the Caribbean. In the 2021-2022 season, that was up to 967. And this year, 950. So a little bit down, but still, you know, you know, not far off.
Yeah, and I think the understanding for that is obviously there's a number of large super yachts that are owned by Russians who are under sanctions, so therefore they are not in the Caribbean this winter.
Makes perfect sense.
So we think that's what would account for that dip rather than them going anywhere else.
Okay.
And I guess there might be an element as well of there is a bit more freedom to travel. So last year, if you were thinking of trying to do something like the South Pacific, that would have still seemed quite daunting because there are a lot of COVID restrictions in place, whereas this year, areas like that are a lot more accessible again.
You're right. It wasn't all that long ago that it was
no
testing on the islands and getting between them was a real pain in the ass. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But from what I've seen, very successful Caribbean season. It was great to be down there.
Successful Caribbean season for Stuart.
Stuart Campbell had a great Caribbean season.
Best ever.
Although I might not try and push through a 3-week trip next year if I expect to stay married for much longer. I got back and actually, my furniture, my clothes weren't on the front lawn.
Well, that's good.
If I'd stayed for one more weekend, I think they would have been. So thank you, Mrs. Campbell, for not kicking me out and letting me spend 2.5 weeks in the Caribbean. Thank you, Sophia. And thank you for tuning in and listening to this week's episode of Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Check out our sponsor, KVH, and we'll see you next time.